the PCHEM for All podcast. Welcome. In this podcast, I'd like to give the introduction to my Spectroscopy in One Dimension book. It's a sort of a background of the development of quantum thinking. So here we go, Chapter 1, Introduction. We live in a mysterious world. Microwave ovens heat food in minutes, yet the interior of the oven remains cool to the touch. There are light-emitting diodes, polarized screens, and multi-megapixel diode arrays on nearly every electronic device. Our atmosphere contains spectral windows where visible light can enter and heat, infrared light, can escape. These windows can be closed by some molecules, but not others. We put lasers on seemingly everything: weapons, rangefinders, radar guns, barcode scanners, and thermometers. None of these phenomena or products can be understood without quantum mechanics. And the field that birthed the mysterious quantum theory is spectroscopy. The aim of this book is to teach you spectroscopy. Spectroscopy is the study of light interacting with matter through absorption, emission, scattering, all kinds of phenomena in that vein. Learning spectroscopy will also lead to an understanding of the main features of quantum theory. We take the unique approach of presenting the whole theory in one dimension. This one-dimensional approach will enable an intuition into the behavior of three-dimensional systems by analogy. Useful modes of thought. Before quantum theory, before physics, and before mathematical science, people lived in a mysterious world of vital forces, formal causes, and ethereal vortices propelling the planets through the heavens. Algebra slowly emerged in the work of Al-Khwarizmi and Diophantus. René Descartes, who lived from 1596 to 1650, recognized that in his 1929 manuscript, Rules for the Direction of the Mind, that math could play an important role. His rule number 4 is, quote, "There is a need of a method for finding out the truth," end quote. In his exposition on this rule, he spoke of a seed-like epiphany, or, quote, "germs of useful modes of thought," end quote, as the awareness that mathematics in our minds could explain the operations of the world outside. For the human mind, this is a quote from his Rules for the Direction of the Mind, quote, "For the human mind has in it something that we may call divine, wherein are scattered the first germs of useful modes of thought," end quote. Over the remaining centuries to our present day, these mathematical germs of useful modes of thought became calculus and physics. They directed the mind of humanity toward scientific discoveries and technological advancements that continued to astonish and amaze. It was Descartes' Geometry, published in 1637, that inspired a young Isaac Newton to embark on original mathematical work. In a few short years, Newtonian physics would describe the motions of the planets and the paths of cannonballs. The world-changing consequences cannot be overstated. Knowing the trajectory of a moving object yielded predictive abilities of biblical proportion, as Alexander Pope quipped. His quote is, "Nature and nature's laws lay hid in night. God said, let Newton be, and all was light." The mathematics Newton developed for his work on gravitation led to successful mathematical descriptions of electric and magnetic forces by Fourier, Faraday, and Maxwell. A great hubris developed. It was believed, then and now, that a mechanistic and mathematical description was possible in all areas of study, including economics, sociology, and psychology. However, protruding through the topsoil of this lush valley of discovery were hints of another structure of nature. There was trouble in paradise. There was darkness in the light. The fundamental nature of light was an enigma. Newton imagined light as a corpuscle or particle, while Huggins, another scientist of the day, imagined it as an undulatory wave. The reputation of Newton made the particulate view unassailable for over a century. In fact, Thomas Young's Baconian lectures to the Royal Society on the Nature of Light in 1801 and 1803 were harshly criticized as being destitute of every species of merit, for suggesting that light was an undulatory wave, as suggested by Huggins. Over the years, data piled up, supporting both views. The conservation of kinetic energy of light ejected, or photoelectrons, clearly suggests that light is a particle, we call a photon, and that electrons are particles as well. In contrast, though, the diffraction patterns of light described by Thomas Young suggested that light was a wave. Strangely, even electrons, which are clearly particles with a measurable mass and charge, produce the same kind of diffraction patterns, behaving like waves, when they are bounced off of a crystalline substance. There seemed to be a world of mystery surrounding spectroscopy, even in the simplest atom, hydrogen. Hot hydrogen atoms in an electric discharge produced emissions occurring in very narrow bands that appeared as lines on a photographic plate. Balmer and Rydberg showed that these spectral emission lines of the hydrogen atom could be aligned with an integer series, but the meaning of these integers was unclear. The germ of quantum thought appears. The unintentional beginning of quantum theory takes place in 1877 with Ludwig Boltzmann. Boltzmann was an atomist and successfully described the statistical emergence of equilibrium in the velocities of individual gas particles. He connected this statistical treatment to the entropy. In developing his statistical argument, he began with a simple mathematical starting point. This is a quote from his 1877 paper. The number of molecules is not infinite in a mathematical sense, yet the number of velocities each molecule is capable of is effectively infinite. Given this last condition, the calculations are very difficult. To facilitate understanding, I will, as in earlier work, consider a limiting case, namely that kinetic energy has discrete values. This assumption does not correspond to any realistic mechanical model, but it is easier to handle mathematically. His statistical starting point was with quantized kinetic energy, discrete countable units. Boltzmann quickly points out that this is not meant to actually reflect nature, but a germ of a useful mode of thought, to use Descartes' words, had been introduced. This germ of thought was picked up by Max Planck in his work on blackbody radiation. And here's a quote from his paper. While the significance of the quantum of action, we now call Planck's constant, or H, for the interrelation between entropy and probability was thus conclusively established, the part played by this new constant in uniform regular occurrence of physical processes still remained an open question. I therefore tried immediately to weld the elementary quantum of action somehow into the framework of the classical theory. The failure of every attempt to bridge this obstacle soon made it evident that the elementary quantum of action plays a fundamental part in atomic physics, and that this introduction opened up a new era in natural science. End quote. This elementary quantum of action, introduced by Planck, became what we call Planck's constant, and the Planck equation, which is shown in equation 1 of the text, E equals H nu, was quickly verified by the photoelectron experiment. Planck was not an atomist, but he was being pulled inexorably toward atomism by his study of blackbody radiation. Blackbody radiation is the light emitted by all hot objects, regardless of their composition. Instead of quantized energies, Planck introduced the idea that light emitted and absorbed by oscillators in a black body could only be emitted or absorbed in discrete energy packets characterized by the elementary quantum of action, H. As seen in equation 1, Wien's law matched the emission spectrum at short wavelengths. The Rayleigh-Jeans law matched the emission spectrum at long wavelengths, and Planck's law matched the experimental spectrum over the whole range. The central feature of Planck's equation is the atomistic Boltzmann distribution of the elementary quanta of action, H nu. The emission of all blackbody irradiators was solved, but the emission lines of the most simple atom, hydrogen, were still a problem for classical physics. The integers of Balmer and Rydberg were still a mystery. Bohr proposed that these emission lines represented quantized electron jumps between discrete orbits, similar to planetary orbits in a solar system. This was problematic in many ways because charged particles spinning in a circle would emit electromagnetic radiation continuously as they spiraled into the nucleus. What kept the electrons in specific orbits around an attractive nucleus? Standing waves. De Broglie was the first to connect the discrete orbit idea to standing waves in his dissertation in 1924. He loved music, and the wave behavior of stringed instruments produced in him the germ of a useful mode of thinking, namely that electron orbits might consist of discrete standing waves. He was able to combine Planck's equation, E equals hc over lambda, and Einstein's equation, E equals mc squared, to relate wavelength to momentum. Electron diffraction experiments validated this relationship. Einstein tipped his hat to de Broglie in a paper that was later read by Erwin Schrödinger. The quantized standing wave germ of thought passed from de Broglie to Einstein to Schrödinger. 2 years later, Schrödinger's wave mechanics burst onto the scene. Erwin Schrödinger combined the integer quantum numbers of Rydberg, the quantized orbits of Bohr, and the standing waves of de Broglie to create a wave mechanical model of the hydrogen atom. Thus, quantum theory and wave mechanics became quantum mechanics. In wave mechanics, waves are described by wave functions. These functions, for reasons described later, must be smooth, finite, continuous, and single-valued. The solutions to Schrödinger's complex differential equations necessitated the use of the eigenvalue equation that we call Schrödinger's equation. Developing wave functions for the hydrogen atom and solving for their quantized energies took Schrödinger 2 months of intense effort. The resulting differential equations were beyond his ability, so he reached out to his colleague Hermann Weyl to get help with the solution to the radial wave function. Once solved, transitions between the quantized energy states matched the Balmer rules. But what about the intensities of the transitions, and the transitions that seem to have no intensity, otherwise known as forbidden transitions and selection rules? This problem was also solved by Schrödinger in his 1926 paper, using the total electron moment. If the square of the wave function was interpreted as the probability distribution of the particle in all space, then the intensity of the emitted radiation of a particular frequency is expected to be proportional to the square of the total electric moment. With this principle in place, Schrödinger was able to produce stick spectra that showed an uncanny match between experiment and theory. The new theory matched the experimental data so closely that many felt that wave mechanics could explain everything. For example, Paul Dirac, who shared the 1933 Nobel Prize with Schrödinger, remarked in 1929, quote, "The underlying physical laws necessary for the mathematical theory for a large part of physics and the whole of chemistry are thus completely known, and the difficulty is only that the exact application of these laws leads to equations much too complicated to be soluble." In the very next sentence of his 1929 paper, Dirac calls out for approximations that help explain quantum mechanical applications. Here he quotes, "It therefore becomes desirable that approximate practical methods of applying quantum mechanics should be developed, which can lead to an explanation of the main features of complex atomic systems without too much computation." That is why this book exists. In this text, you will find a complete example of quantum mechanics applied to the most simple computational model, a one-dimensional wave function. One can understand the whole detailed quantum mechanical explanation of spectroscopy using the one-dimensional wave functions of the particle in a box and a particle on a ring. These traditional systems are introduced in most physical chemistry textbooks, but they stop with the solution of the energy levels. We show the necessary computations to calculate the intensities and wavelengths of absorption, emission, and scattering spectral transitions, as well as the selection rules for both the 1D particle in a box and the 1D particle on a ring systems. Then entered a symmetry germ of thought. Hermann Weyl, who helped Schrödinger with the eigenvalue problem, caught an idea from his colleague, Amelie Emmy-Noether, that nature possessed a deep symmetry that was reflected in the conservation laws of energy, momentum, charge, etc. Weyl published his group theory of quantum mechanics in 1928, and Eugene Wigner simplified it and applied it to atomic spectra in 1931. The most profound result is the ability to reduce the computation of complex wave equations to simple symmetry relationships that will fit on a cocktail napkin. This will be shown in the middle section of this book. Jumping from this point in history to the present day, we will explore the mathematics of quantum mechanics in one dimension in three ways, which make up the three major parts of my course and also of this text. We will solve the Schrödinger equation and the transition moment integrals using analytical calculus. We will do the same solutions numerically in Excel, and then we will show how mathematical group theory solutions of these selection rules can allow us to extend these results to three dimensions. The skills developed in the one-dimensional system may be very effectively applied to three-dimensional systems. The prediction of the selection rules of atomic spectroscopy, molecular vibrational spectroscopy, molecular rotational spectroscopy, molecular row vibrational spectroscopy, and electronic spectroscopy are understood through symmetry and by analogy. This deep understanding of one-dimensional systems opens the door to understanding all the aforementioned examples of our mysterious quantum world of microwave ovens, the greenhouse effect, lasers, and even the mapping of the expansion of our universe. So I hope that you will take time to learn more about quantum chemistry and spectroscopy. Thank you for listening to the PChem for All podcast. Don't forget to subscribe.